It is a Thursday, and it is the time to get our view from the north. You can find the work he does for Comcast Sportsnet online, videos included. Visit CSNNW.com. He's talking ball. He'll be talking Ducks on Comcast Channel 730 in high def on my Xfinity system. Enter his world of Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, a happy Thursday to you, sir. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How about you?
All is well. All is well. You know, every time I enter your name in to bring up your Twitter account and I've got to put the J in there, I'm like, well, why didn't he just get Aaron Fentress? And I did research, and do you realize there is an at Aaron Fentress who has 11 followers and he's still hasn't posted a first tweet?
Wait, are you sure that guy hasn't been taken out yet? Because I've paid about 10 grand to make sure that...
Did you make the check out to Bernie Madoff? No, I don't know why. I'm a little OCD, so stuff like this bothers me. But I was like, Fentress is a Twitter legend, verified, and this guy's got the full name. I think we need to start a movement here and end this crap.
I'm all down for it. All my followers need to just harass the heck out of him until he bails out.
All right, let's start with this. The word that Dakota Prukop is out front in the quarterback race, you know, a guy with 25 college starts against a couple of Ducks who have a total of none. Could we rate this least surprising news so far?
Oh, definitely. Not surprising at all. Should have been expected. I know there's some fans out there who have high hopes for Travis Johnson, the number 3 rated dual threat quarterback in the nation coming out a couple years ago, and his time will probably come unless he gets reeled in by Terry Wilson Jr. or Herbert. But, you know, experience matters, and unless you're a savant like Mariota, where experience didn't matter, you need that time to develop. And, you know, Travis Johnson has said himself that Dakota's just clearly more experienced, has more savvy than him, better pocket presence, better understanding of the offense, how to play college football, because he's played it. And Dakota's pretty good, you know, and Travis might have a higher ceiling. We'll see as time goes on here for his career at Oregon. But, you know, Dakota's got some skills, and he knows what he's doing, and he's taking charge of this offense. And, you know, David Yost, the quarterback's coach, said the first week that, you know, he's looking for that guy who has that it factor, that guy who takes charge, takes control, leads the team, is running the show, and is producing points. And that seems to be Dakota right now, and that should have been expected from day one.
On your three and out segment on the Comcast site, you reported on the first scrimmage. Non-specific, from the days you played college ball, so you start fall camp, it's time for that first scrimmage. You know, what's logical as far as expectations or, you know, the primary benefits to be gained in a first scrimmage?
Well, the offense is always behind the defense, and that's been talked about for eons because it's just true, mainly because the offense has to control that weird egg-shaped thing.
Yeah.
and do stuff with it. And so, you know, miscommunications happen, bad routes, mess up protection. You know, it takes one little itty-bitty mistake on offense to make the defense look good. So, you know, that first scrimmage, you're basically trying to, you know, go see where you are in the mistake, you know, categories. What types of mistakes are you going to make when it's semi-live? And then you can go back and fix them. And Helfrich, after talking about all the things that went wrong, you know, he said, hey, you know, typical first scrimmage. And that's what you take out of it. You know, there was 4 turnovers, some bad throws, a fumble. The defense gave up some big plays. All things you do not want to see, but that's why you do it. If you were great the first time out, you wouldn't have to practice. So that's sort of what I took out of it. And, you know, I'm back in the olden times when we play, I mean, we knew going into a scrimmage we were going to make a bunch of mistakes. You get all jacked up. It's like, man, it's a scrimmage, especially if there's officials there. Then all of a sudden, you know, you think it's a game and you get a little hyped up. You don't think as clearly. And so, you know, I took from it what, you know, I think I've heard from Ducks coaches back to Bilotti and Kelly that, you know, that those first scrimmages usually aren't pretty.
Wow, back in the olden days?
Back in the olden times.
I'm 10 years older than you. You just buried me.
This is back when I bought the Bad album on vinyl. That's olden times, dude.
Nice. Talking with Aaron Fencher's Comcast Sportsnet. On a Monday, you wrote about Farrell Brown. We actually got some one-on-one time with him at Media Day. They've got three experienced tight ends with Heath Bayless and Munt. How would you say he's progressing, you know, rallying from that horrible injury? And what could he possibly add as a dangerous receiving threat if he's healthy and contributing?
Yeah, he seems to be, you know, all the way back to the point where he doesn't even want to talk about it anymore. You know, he's like, stop asking me about my leg injury, and now has decided to boycott the media until after the first game of the season, which I don't really blame him because, you know, it's the subject that everyone wants to talk to you about is the most, you know, devastating moment of your life, your physical well-being. It gets kind of old after a while. But, no, I think if he truly is back to himself, he's by far the best receiving tight end on the team. He's an NFL-caliber talent. And if he's back to 85-90% of that, he's an upgrade over Munt and Bayless, who are nice tight ends, but they just don't have his physical ability and how he was blossoming in 2014. I think he was at 400-plus yards and 6 touchdowns before he got injured. And that was, you know, that's as good as a tight end as we've seen since the Colt era. Had a pretty nice season, and you have to go back to Ed Dixon, probably.
Dixon, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so Farrell was looking the part and finally coming into his own when he got injured. So if he can get back to, you know, close to that, then you're just going to have a guy out there left out of that tight end spot who's going to be a nightmare for teams to deal with because of his height and size.
I want to get a thought about the defense. Obviously, the D was a bit of a horror movie a lot of last year. And while it's the first scrimmage, they did cough up a couple of one-play TD drives. So beyond a commentary, does this serve as kind of a reminder that, hey, new coordinator, new system, a lot of new faces, it's a process. There's no just add water fix.
Yeah, you know, Helfer's mentioned, he said, look, you know, and I don't know if it was Taj Griffin or not, but he used the analogy, and like, look, if Taj Griffin juke somebody and makes a big, you know, big play, that's one for the offense, but it's a nick on the defense. Well, Taj is going to juke a lot of people. So if the defense got juked by Taj and he took it to the house, it's still bad, but it's like, okay, well, that's Taj, you know. But, you know, again, I think if you're following this defense, you don't want to hear things like that because you saw that too much of that last year. You saw short passes become long passes. You saw a bunch of long passes. You saw a bunch of problems in the secondary. And, you know, they vow they're fixing it. They vow they're being held more accountable by hopes that people are being called out and they make silly mistakes, that they're smarter, wiser after going through what they went through last year. They're going to be pretty deep, they believe. Everyone's coming back, I think, except Nacho, who transferred. So, you know, I think as they progress, if you're a fan, you want to hear more along the lines of the defense is holding its own against the offense. Because let's face it, this offense is stacked.
Yep.
And it should be no surprise that once the offense gets its act together, and they have an experienced quarterback in there in a scrimmage, they should be able to put up points. Because you expect them to do that to everyone in the nation if you're a Ducks fan, but you just don't want it to be, you know, gratuitous stuff. You don't want it to be one-play drives. Make them work for it. You don't want to hear about, you know, defenders letting guys get behind them in 10-second drills, you know, which is what we heard about on the other day. So that defense, to me, is the most fascinating part of this team. I'm watching that with great anticipation to see if they can truly improve. I mean, they're going to improve over last year, but to see if they can get back to 2014 or not, or if they're just going to have to wait a year, just what I believe. I think the 2017 defense will be way better than this year's defense.
Now, as far as the linebackers go, you brought it up in your Roses or Roulette segment. Great Oregon teams have always had just a ridiculous playmaker back there. So who do you see as the front runners to start, and how maybe cautious should we be about what they're capable of immediately?
You know, it's hard to say. I've heard that Mattingly has maybe moved ahead of Hodgkins.
Hodgkins, the JUCO kid? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so hard to know at this point. That's just one little tidbit I heard. He may have moved ahead of him. He was taking a lot of first-team reps. But I know Mosley had Hodgkins as his starter, his too deep, and he goes to practice, but that was before practice began, I should say. And then the outside guys are probably going to be Jimmy Swain and Johnny Reagan, the two most experienced outside types they have, unless they end up moving Prevo back to the outside backer. When I saw him, he didn't seem like he gained a ton of weight. He playing defensive end. And from everything I understand, Jalen Jelks is starting at the weak side defensive end right now, not Prevo. And Prevo is a starting caliber guy. I think he's the leading returning tackler amongst the front seven, I think with 40 tackles last year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, they have some bodies. They have some pieces. Just guys who just haven't been asked to do it for an entire season. And that's, you know, that's where the question mark, you know, comes into play. And, you know, I have no doubt that they have talent and ability and that they can probably perform. You just don't know if they can perform at a championship caliber level like a Kiko Alonso, like a Michael Clay, and guys like that.
Final thought, the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team won their pool, went 5-for-5. Then there was the criticism. They weren't in sync. Then they just torched Argentina. any logic as, you know, as NBA fans, it's like, man, we just saw these guys, and we've been following them since November. They're probably going to win the gold, but it's just hard to get excited about a group who it seems like we were watching 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and plus a lot of the games, you know, aren't that interesting. I think I tuned in to watch, I can't remember who they were playing, but I tuned in to watch part of it. I think it might have been France.
Was it a close game? Because they beat Serbia and France by three.
It started out as a close game, and then the U.S. just pulled away. And so the problem is, you know, you want, to me personally, the teams sound more interesting on paper than they are to watch, only because they're going to spank whoever they play. And then you don't watch a game and it's close, and you're like, what the hell is their problem? Like, I don't think, ooh, it was close, I should have watched it. I think, wait, it was close? Man, they suck. So how do you really deal with it from an entertainment standpoint? And people forget, man, that the original Dream Team, they had a couple of close games. Not games that they were going to lose, but there were a couple of games in the second half. It was 4 or 5 points. And then they ultimately pulled away. And the criticism thing, you know, look, I don't know. I heard Barkley talking trash about the team the other day. They weren't put together the right way, blah, blah, blah. So now some people are saying they should leave some stars off. And I say no. The stars just need to be able to learn to play together and be unselfish. And I think for the most part they haven't been really that selfish. So it is what it is. Part of me would like to see them go back to the college kids, but the problem is all the best college kids are going pro after 1 year.
Right.
They would get destroyed. So then you would send our second tier college kids to play against NBA guys, and they would just get smoked. You know, let's not forget a team with David Robinson, Mitch Richmond, Dan Marley, and Danny Manning, or Elliot, or both were on that 88 team.
Yep, the 88 team, that's right.
And they lost. And that looked like a bunch of future All-Stars and a couple Hall of Famers, and they lost. So you wouldn't have that caliber of player on a college-based Olympic team right now because you just wouldn't have that level of stars who've been around junior, you know, senior years to come out. You'd have a bunch of freshman kids heading to the lottery, and if you ever watched the lottery, would you want a team made up of those guys?
No, I agree. I don't think that there's any turning back now.
Yeah, so I think you keep it the way it is, and I don't know. It's just I wait for the medal round, and I'll start paying attention. But it's what it is.
All right. Hey, follow this guy, CSNNW.com online, on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. Always a pleasure, sir. You have a great week. Catch up next Thursday.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.